Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. But are your bills accurate? It's estimated over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. To save, visit HealthLock.com today.
The Craig Ferguson Fancy Rascal stand-up tour continues throughout 2024. For a full list of dates and tickets, go to thecraigfergusonshow.com/tour. See you out there. thecraigfergusonshow.com/tour. My name is Craig Ferguson. The name of this podcast is Joy. I talk to interesting people about what brings them happiness. Today on the podcast, my guest is Ronnie Cheng. He's a Chinese Malaysian American comedian who is a huge. He's like blowing up all over the place. He's like the biggest deal on the internet and TV. He's very, very, very funny and very interesting. Here he is. That's a very nice watch.
Oh, thank you.
I kind of like rocking. I got a Breitling.
Yeah. Breitling, the watch of...
Oh, white guys?
Of people. of certain people.
No, not white guys.
I don't think white guys, so I think Breitling.
Really?
Yeah. I think like people who don't care about watches, but in a cool way, not in an ignorant way. I'll just wear, you know.
I have two watches.
Yeah. There you go.
They're both Breitling.
Yeah. Because you don't care.
So it's not that I don't care. I don't care, but in a cool way.
I was fucking spot on.
You absolutely fucking nailed that. All right.
Yeah.
All right. I wanted to ask you something before we start because, I've watched a lot of your stuff.
Oh, thank you. Sorry.
And it's very funny.
Thank you.
But I want to talk to you about Australia.
Oh, please.
Because you went to school in Australia, right? You went to university in Australia.
I only went to law school there, but which, as you know, is undergraduate. So
right.
I went to undergrad law school there. So
are you a lawyer then?
Yeah, I passed the bar in Australia, yeah.
So, but you can only do law in Australia, which is like sheep and...
Yeah, it's all criminals anyway, so...
Yeah. But what happened in Australia, I think, is that if you can trace yourself back to the original criminals, that's actually cool now, right?
It's cool if you're them.
Right.
They make it sound cool.
But it's not cool.
I don't think it's cool.
Well, they got a pretty bad record.
I think so. I'm not scared. Yeah, I'm the only one who will say it. You know, everyone else either doesn't know about it or bass in it. I'm like, yeah, you guys kind of...
It was pretty bad.
It was not a good time.
No, it was pretty... I mean, they just kind of wiped out everybody who was there.
Never formed a symbiosis with the indigenous. Not that anyone really did, but, you know, at least... The Maoris, I think they had a treaty at least, you know. And you can, when you go to New Zealand, Maoris are on the money.
Yeah.
You know, Maori language. You come in, they greet you.
Right.
In Maori, you know, the Maori art is kind of embedded into society. Right. In New Zealand, you know, Australia,
not so much.
They didn't do a good job of,
When I was in Australia, I've never been in Australia sober, so I haven't been there. I've been there a long time, but I worked with an Australian comedian called Ernie Dingo. Do you know Ernie Dingo?
I heard of Ernie Dingo.
Yeah, Ernie Dingo is cool. He's an Aboriginal comedian.
Please continue.
Well, I'm just saying, I worked with him, but you didn't know him. So
I've heard of him, but you're not. I'm not trying
different generation.
I'm not trying to be a dick here. You've got a couple of generations on
definitely,
me.
Definitely.
I came on this podcast to talk to you, honestly, because
I want
to hear about these stories.
Well,
when were you? When did you meet Ernie Dingo?
Back in the time, the Kaiser was amassing his armies on the border.
When did you meet Ernie Dingo? What was the circumstance?
I was at the Melbourne Comedy Fest.
Yes, my home festival.
Really?
Yes, another thing I want to talk to you about.
Right, okay. So I was at the Melbourne Comedy Festival in an area called Fitzroy.
Yes. What year was this, roughly?
God, it'd be about 1987, 88.
That's too
long. Crazy,
ago.
Right?
It's too long ago.
I know.
That's too far.
That's nuts. I worked with another Australian comedian called Anthony Morgan. You know Anthony Morgan?
I know him very well.
You know?
I talk to him all the time. I make his website.
He's a great comedian.
He's a great comedian, great guy. He exited the game a little bit. He moved to Tasmania, lives kind of off the grid, but he occasionally...
He's kind of an off-the-grid sort of a guy. Even in the 80s, he was off the grid.
That I don't know. That I can speak to. But I know that he was a legendary... He was probably the original modern Australian folk hero.
Well, Anthony Morgan and I, we used to play this because we had this drinking game we used to do. And it was a place called The Last Laugh.
Yes, I know.
Is it still there?
No, The Last Laugh moved to Collins Street.
Okay.
At the Athenaeum.
Right.
Theater.
Remember the Athenaeum. The Doug Anthony All-Stars used to play there.
I know Doug Anthony very well as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then, unfortunately, so it was a comedy club in Collins Street when I started.
Right.
And then, unfortunately, it closed down.
But Australia at that time had certainly in the 80s, which is, you were probably being born then?
I was just born.
Right.
Newborn.
So you were a tiny little baby.
I was a small baby.
And I was getting fucked up with Anthony Morgan?
Yes. Yeah. But it's more, well, that's crazy. Yeah, please continue. I don't interrupt you.
Please interrupt me because I can do this podcast. I can't do this one with you without you.
No, because I started doing comedy in Australia in 2009.
Right.
Too late. It felt pretty late to me. I started when I was 24.
That's about right.
Yeah. I started 24. I think that was a good age to start. You know, I wasn't ahead of the curve, but I wasn't behind it, I think.
Yeah.
And because I'm a fan of comedy, I just love comedy history. And because I started in Australia, I have a fondness for Australian comedy history. That's why when you say these names, it's like, I know to you, it's not even history. To you, that's just your peers.
It's just my life, but I am now living history. That's what it is. I'm like colonial Williamsburg, but as a person.
Yeah,
but
the
thing is, Anthony Morgan and I used to have this, but it was upstairs at the Prince Pat.
Yeah.
And we had this deal. We had to drink, and you weren't allowed to have anything in your head when you got to the microphone, and you had to do 10 minutes.
Yeah, you guys are crazy.
It was, I don't know that it was good, but it was...
Anthony Morgan comes from this very prolific type of comic, that category. There's some geniuses in the world who are just... They just go on stage and, you know, for me, comedy takes so much work and it's scary and I have to work at it for months and months and months and hopefully I'll have 5 minutes that's good or decent. But for some people, it's just like they're so prolific that it just comes and goes. And part of that tradition, I think, is like an Edinburgh thing.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, because
I've
been to Edinburgh Fringe Festival. I've done it a few times.
Right.
And so... You know,
and Anthony went there and did it as well.
Yeah,
right? But I lost touch with him after Australia. I don't know. I was still drinking then, and I got sober.
I'm so glad I can. You give me a reason to message him again.
He's maybe, I would say maybe the best stand up I've ever seen.
See, I hear legends of this.
Yeah.
I hear legends of this, and unfortunately, it was a time before. You know, writing was invented. So there's no record of any of this.
Right. There's some hieroglyphics of him.
There's some hieroglyphic, but there's no record of this. But this is all I hear because he was, to ground this in a bit of facts, it's fair to say the biggest comedy management company in Australia is Token.
Right.
Token Management.
Right.
And the guy who founded it is Kevin White. And Kevin White, so he imagine this guy who founded the most successful comedy management company in the country.
Right.
When he was 18, he managed Anthony Morgan.
Wow.
So meaning this is not just a case of comics saying someone's good.
No,
this
no,
guy
no.
was commercially, he was considered the best. You know, he was the best.
He was, but he was, I remember, we had a couple of nights out and you know, he was pretty, pretty wild.
Oh, he was? When I met him, he was in my sitcom. He was in my sitcom, yeah. So I knew of him before, but I wrote this sitcom about being a law
student.
International student, yeah. And I wrote him a part. I mean, it kind of came organically. It wasn't like I was out looking to write him a part, but of the kind of wary, bitter law lecturer. And my co-writer, Declan Fay, also Australian, he suggests Anthony Morgan for this. I was like, yeah, that's great. So we had him in and I was a bit worried because I never met him before. I thought maybe he'd be like, don't come at me with your stupid, you know, whatever your new ideas are. I don't care about this. Do you know who
he
I was?
He was always a very nice guy.
Oh, the nicest dude, not that energy at all. He came very collaborative. He got it. He was down. He played with us. Very, very down to earth, you know.
That's cool. But he lives in Cayman, Tasmania.
Essentially, he lives off the grid in Tasmania. I'm pretty sure built. Yeah, not pretty sure. I know for a fact he built his own house with his own hands, and then he'll go and do the local pub gig every few months. And I'll kind of harass him to like record it, or I'll harass him to digitalize a cassette that he's recorded from years ago.
It's so funny because he's kind of like, you know, like in the movies where they have to go and get the detective. You know, and he's retired, but he works on his boat. And they say, you're the only guy that... Anthony Morgan's kind of like that as a comedian. Yes. Isn't he? Like, yes. I didn't give up on comedy. Comedy gave up on me.
There's a bit of that. You know? And I think he tried to come to America. And I think he toured a bit in America. And I think... There's certain comics who know him very well, you know, and so I'm so surprised that you would mention him.
Like I say, I think he may be the. I mean, look, in my memory, he's the best I've ever seen.
It's the fate of all legends to be forgotten. Yeah, I guess. But he's still in Australia, and I'll put you guys in touch if you want.
But how did you become a fan of comedy? Like, you grew up in Singapore, right?
Yes, yes.
So is there a big scene of comedy there?
No, there wasn't.
Was it like a TV thing that you fell in love with?
I grew up in Singapore, but they have their own type of comedy, you know, where it's not stand up. It's kind of TV, sketch, a little slapsticky. There was one stand up comic in Australia, but it's not a known thing. Stand up comedy is not a known tradition in Singapore.
Right.
The way it is in the UK or Scotland or Australia, you know. Where it's very established, you know what you're supposed to do. You go to the pub, you watch a comic, how you're supposed to behave. Right? We don't have those norms.
But when I started, there wasn't. There was Billy Connolly, and that was it.
Oh, okay. Well, then maybe we're not so different.
Yeah,
then.
When I started in Scotland, there was Billy Connolly, who was huge. Yes. Like, Billy's 20 years older than me.
Still is huge.
Yeah. Yo, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And then there were no comedy clubs. There was no places to go. So you would go to a music club or a disco or something.
What year was this?
That'd be like mid-80s.
Mid-80s still, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
In America, they were they had all the comedy clubs, the guys with the piano key ties and all that. But we didn't have any of that.
You know what's interesting? I'm very lucky to meet Jerry Seinfeld. And I got to ask him, I asked him about this, and he said the same thing as you did. He said when he started, there was nothing.
That's right. I think he's probably right.
He definitely wasn't saying this to just be arrogant. He was just saying like, we were the ones who started it.
He's not wrong.
The rooms.
Him and Leno at the time as well. I mean, these guys. Do you ever meet Leno?
No, I've never met him.
Leno's an interesting guy. Not many people know how good a stand-up.
Yes,
he is.
Yes. I believe that. I believe he's a great stand-up.
He really is.
Keith Robinson at the Cellar will always tell me how good.
I did some dates with Jay this summer. Yeah. We did this like old dudes of late night thing.
That's funny. That was funny.
It was great.
That's funny. Who else was in it?
Me and Jay and Arsenio Hall.
Jackie Mason.
No, Jackie Mason.
Arsenio is great. I met Arsenio.
Yeah, he's lovely. He's the nicest. Another great stand-up. Yes. I mean, it's like, but it's not, I think stand-up is a little bit like playing electric guitar. There's a lot of people who are good at it, but you got to have something that's maybe just a little different.
Sure.
I mean, to make you stand out.
Yeah, I think that's all art.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. So what was it with you, you think, that made you... Because you have to do this thing. I think all stand-ups have to do this. You go on stage and you die and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And that's the... When you do that, like a real stand-up laughs when you say that to them, right? Because that's what...
Yeah, that's what it is.
Because I remember the first time it happened to me and when it was terrible.
It was terrible.
And when I came off and people were going, oh, I'm sorry that happened. I was like, oh, no, I got to do that again.
Yeah.
I got to do it again.
Yeah.
And I think there's something about stand-up comedians, the male, female, doesn't matter. It's like you're drawn to that weird kind of love of failure. Is it failure? What is it?
I don't know if there's
darkness.
I don't know if there's a love of failure. I do think that I do think if I'm looking for a common thread there, I would say that it's probably that all the great comics I know don't think that they're good at comedy.
Right.
And so you naturally think that you're bad. You're shit.
You're shit. Well, yeah.
And so when you bomb, if you feel like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to bomb, I'm not good at it.
Yeah, you're validated.
Right. And then that's kind of how you quote unquote be a good comic. That's a sign of being a good comic, because when you, not that you enjoy bombing, but you're able to process it in a way where you're like, oh yeah, I'm not good.
The Craig Ferguson Fancy Rascal stand-up tour continues throughout the United States in 2024. For a full list of dates and tickets, go to thecraigfergusonshow.com/tour. See you out there.
You know how you can make your summer vacation better? Is with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding and loungewear. It's like being at home, but also going away. It's great. And now you can get 35% off. You can get the unmatched softness. It's really as buttery smoothness of Cozy Earth's bedding. It's better than the finest hotels, and you get a really good night's sleep on your travels. And that's important. It's travel friendly. It's hassle free. Cozy Earth's bedding comes in adorable totes, making it the perfect companion for your adventures near and far. You can stay cool and comfy during long flights, and you know what that's like, with the Cozy Earth temperature regulating bamboo joggers and pullover crew. Makes you look cool when you're traveling. I like it. Well, as cool as I can look when I'm traveling. So discover your next destination for ultimate comfort at Cozy Earth. Visit CozyEarth.com and use our code JOY at checkout, and you'll get 35% off. And let them know we sent you after the checkout. Promo code JOY. J-O-Y. JOY. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Look, everybody has stuff that stresses them out and annoys them, and I'm no different from anybody else. For example, I get very irritated that people that wear shoes that look like feet. That's not a big deal, but it's a big deal to me. Obviously, there are much more important things to get worried about. Get them off your chest. When you keep them bottled up, it starts to affect you negatively. Now, therapy is a safe place to do that. That's what I did. And you figure out what's going on with you, work it through, and then let it go. Let it go, you see, that's what I think. I've done a lot of therapy, and I have to say I'm a very satisfied customer. If you think I'm kind of tense now, you should have seen me before I started. I really do recommend it. If you can do it, you should do it. If you're thinking of starting therapy, I'd suggest giving BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, it's designed to be convenient, it's flexible, and it's suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with, you know, a licensed therapist, a proper one, and then you can switch your therapist at any time for no additional charge. I just think it's a good idea. Give it a shot. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/joypod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/joypod.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
My wife has this theory that all stand-up comedians have the same type of mother.
Oh, interesting. Let's
cold with bad boundaries. That's what she says.
Cold with bad boundaries. Oof. That's pretty close. That's pretty close.
I said it to Lewis Black and he was like, oh my God, that's my mom.
That's great. That's funny.
He said that Lewis said that he only made eye contact with his mom on her deathbed when she was 104.
Oh man.
But you know, it's kind of, it resonates a little bit. I mean, she met, obviously my mom's passed now, but she met my mom. She's like, Jesus. And
For the record, my mom is very warm.
I hear you, all right.
But there is some no boundaries in there and can be very harsh. My mom can be very harsh. So, you know, different word for cold. But
it is that kind of thing. It's like whenever I see a good stand-up now, I think... Their mom must be pretty tough.
Tough, yeah, very tough mom. My mom is tough. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Was she upset that you went into stand up? Because obviously, if you're going into law, that's one set of expectations, and you decide not to practice.
Well, I had a few things to answer your question. She was not as upset as I thought she'd be. Okay. Wasn't thrilled, but not upset. But one of the few reasons for that was that I went to university in a different country.
Right.
So she wasn't even
around. She didn't know.
She didn't know.
She didn't know you were doing stand-up.
Yeah, I didn't tell her. I didn't make a big deal about it. I just went to go do it. Because I kind of instinctively knew, like, hey, if this is going to work for me, I kind of have to do it on my own. I can't be, you know, asking friends to come. I can't be like, you know, making a big deal.
I was like that as well. I would never have friends come see me.
It's hilarious now. Even now, I'm like, I don't want friends to come.
No, I don't like it. I don't even like my wife coming to the show. I'm like, it's like, please don't. Because,
it's not for you.
Yeah, and it'll be in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll be in my head that you're out there going,
1,000%. 1,000%. And also comedy is like, it's different to music in that you have to want to be there. You can't just be background noise.
That's
so if you don't want to be there, just don't, you know what I mean?
Like, have you done any corporate gigs yet?
I've done corporates, yeah.
See, because that's when...
That's the test.
They don't really want you, but they have you anyway because they've seen you on TV.
Corporates are so weird that they want you, but they don't.
Yeah.
They sought you to come and play.
And they will pay you a great deal of money.
But they don't want you to be there.
I know.
It's the weirdest gig ever.
It's horrible.
Nobody wants you to be there.
I talked to a musician, a very famous. Yeah. I'm going to tell you actually who it was. You know Josh Homme from Queens of the Stone Age, right?
Okay.
They don't corporate gigs anymore. He said the last time he did it, he was like playing down the front and there was a nacho cheese fountain. And there was a woman taking and he was like, we can't do this. It's not rock and roll. It's not.
It's not rock and roll.
No.
And it's, you know, comedy and rock and roll are very kind of countercultural. That's why it's at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Yeah.
It's at the Fringe Festival, not the Edinburgh Festival. It's a fringe thing.
Where did you play in Edinburgh?
Underbelly. Unfortunately.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, that's... I don't even know where that is.
The caves. I started in Edinburgh in 84.
Right.
And I did it for, I guess, until about early 90s, I guess.
Okay. You're an Edinburgh boy.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm from Glasgow, but I started in stand-up.
Oh, okay.
I had a show that started at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yes. Yes.
Above a bar called the Café Royal in Edinburgh.
Yes.
And it was...
And what was that? That's not... When you say you had a show, does it mean that was a weekly show?
No, it was every night.
Every night you'd be 2 a.m. at this bar.
Yeah, every night 2 a.m. at this bar during the Edinburgh Festival.
Oh, during the festival. That's cool.
But I didn't have anywhere to live because I was in class. So I used to sleep in the photo booth at Waverley Station.
Yeah.
It's fucking gnarly.
And did you, was it 1 hour?
Yeah.
Did you have guests?
No, I would just do stand-up.
For 1 hour at 2 a.m.?
No, about a half an hour, I think.
Right,
I don't know. It was hard to say that time.
And was it like pay by donation?
Yeah. So who were the comedians that you were drawn to when you were starting out? You thought, I want to be like this or that.
So the truth is, that kind of person
makes me laugh.
Yeah, the truth is when I was 4.5 years old, I was watching Seinfeld, the TV show. And he would do his stand-up in the interstitials.
I remember, yeah.
And then I told my mom, like, hey, I want to do that one day. And she was like, oh, okay, whatever, you know. And that was the first time I saw someone doing that. Like, oh, I didn't even know that was a way to express yourself. But I didn't do anything about that.
At 4 years old, you don't want to be doing clubs at four.
I was in New Hampshire at that time, Manchester, New Hampshire.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So my parents went there for college. And they went to college very late after they had two kids.
Right.
So I was in Manchester, New Hampshire for a bit. And that's where I saw Seinfeld. And
my wife is from New Hampshire.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. There you go. Manchester.
She's from Hanover.
Hanover, okay. Yeah.
But there's a place where they are cold with bad boundaries.
That I don't know. My memories of it was always very warm.
You like it?
I liked it. But I was like 4.
Right.
You know, I go back there now. I went back there after I moved back to America after about 20 years. 25 years actually. It took me 25 years to move back to America. And I went back there as an adult and I was like, oh, I guess this is a very random town to be in. Now
that you're an adult, you say, but you live in New York.
I live in New York, yeah.
Do you
Do you socialize? You part of the scene with like, do you socialize with comics? Do you go to the comedy clubs and hang out backstage and all that?
I hit it hard. I don't hang as much because I guess I'm older or whatever, but like...
Dude, you're not even 40.
I'm old in this scene. And but I do hit the clubs hard in Manhattan. Yeah. In Brooklyn, yeah.
Do you try a material?
Yeah, I try new stuff. I try to get a new line every time I get on. At least one new line.
Right.
You know what I mean? In an old joke even. Just get a new line in.
Do you do that like when you're putting together like an hour?
Yeah, which I'm doing right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you learn it all? Do you write it piece by piece? Are you methodical about it?
My methodology has changed over the years, I think. So right now... I come from Australia, so we're used to the Edinburgh.
Right, that
format,
vibe, yeah.
That vibe, so you do like an hour, right?
Yeah.
You do an hour. It's like sometimes people do an hour before they even have 15 minutes.
Yeah.
As weird as that is, right?
Yeah, yeah, because they're doing crowd work and they're doing...
Right,
yeah,
and they're
telling
personal stories and they're a bit more indulgent and the crowd gives them a bit more rope because it's like one. So I come from that school, but I think I was always considered a more... I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I think I was more... of a US style comic doing like an hour. So I'll never have a great pathos. I never had a great one man show, like someone died or something. You know, my shows were always like kind of 15 minutes of material, 15 minutes of material, 15 minutes of material, and then some ending.
Do you think that'll change as you get older? Do you have kids yet?
No, I don't have kids. No. You know, I come from that. So it's hard for me to differentiate that one man show and, you know, quote unquote pure stand up.
Yeah.
So I, you know,
what is pure stand up though? I don't really understand that.
I mean, I mean, is it one-liners?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's... Okay, so here's where I am right now with this new hour. I've been doing... I've done two tours in America now. This is my third tour. And my goal was I wanted every 15 minutes of this next hour to be something I could just do in a comedy club.
Right.
So that was my goal.
Right.
And so that's kind of what I've been working towards. Meaning I'll work at 15 minutes and then I'll work the next 15 versus... You know, sometimes you just have that club 15.
Yeah.
And then you have like 40 minutes of stuff that will work after you have convinced the audience that you're not terrible at
comedy.
Right,
okay. You know? Yeah, you kind of butter them up and then you can do what you want. Yeah.
Right, right. So now that's kind of my goal was to do that 15 minutes. So in that sense, it's more of a stand, quote unquote stand. But I've always been kind of a longer joke teller, you know. I think that, again, that comes from coming from Australia.
I think so. I think also, to me, that feels more like, if you go to the real kind of storytelling roots of what this thing is.
Yeah.
When I'm putting together an hour, I put together like maybe, I don't know, 20 minutes of stuff that I know I'm going to say.
Yes.
But I know when I always start pretty much the same place. I always start in Denver. The Comedy Works in Denver.
One of the best clubs in the country for some reason. Yes.
Yeah, it's crazy good. So I go there with what is 20 minutes in my head and invariably it's an hour by the time I get it out in the club.
Well, you come from that tradition.
Right.
You come from that, you know, Billy Connolly tradition. You can come up with 20 minutes of ideas and make it come up with an hour.
Well, but I think it feels to me like you have that too, though.
I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think I'm that good at it. Yeah.
Well, I don't know because, like when I watch you do stand-up, it feels to me like you are someone who, like, now maybe I'm wrong, maybe you're really good at when I watched Speakeasy, when you were doing thing about everybody, say the race that you...
Oh, yes.
But there was like the thing with the glass and all that. All that kind of looked really kind of off the cuff to me. Was that really...
I mean, I've been touring that for a while before filming it. And
so it builds in.
It builds
over
in.
Time.
Yeah,
right.
It builds in over time.
I get it.
But I definitely, to go back to what you're saying about turning 20 into an hour... If you have 20, I think you can get to 45, which is basically an hour.
Right.
But if you have 5, I don't know if you can get to... I can't get to an hour.
Do you ever forget? Do you ever go upstairs and you just... You're up on stage and you just fucking forget everything?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done that. You know what Leno said? I said that to Leno. I was talking to Leno about it. He goes, just keep talking. Just keep talking. They don't know the fucking script. Just keep fucking talking.
But that's also a product of being able to play to your own crowd in a very friendly environment.
Definitely.
You know
definitely,
what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, you know, New York comedy clubs can kick you in the ass a little bit.
Right.
So that's why I moved here. Because not like Australia, they probably give you some rope, you know, where you're like, oh yeah, okay, you forgot. You can mess around. You can be like, there's nothing here. You know, like you go through your whole setup and you're like, this was funny in my head. And then, and then people are like, oh, ha, ha, ha. They go along with it.
Right.
Especially if you call your show, you know, testing material.
Right.
Craig Ferguson's testing material, whatever
I don't test material.
Yeah, I know. You just go for it. Again, you come from the...
well. Yeah. I mean, also the thing is as well is that if it doesn't work, that's also funny.
Yes. Well, you know, no, that's my point.
Yeah.
That you're in a friendly environment where if something doesn't work, it's also funny and you honestly, you have the chops to pull it off anyway.
All right, so...
But I don't. I don't have
it. No, I disagree with that. I think what it is is that... What happens when you get what you want from stand-up? What do you want from it? Apart from the... Like, you want to succeed every show.
Yes.
But a lot of stand-ups, I know they want to be actors, or they want to be writers, or they want to be philosophers, or they want to be...
If I can do a gig where my old stuff killed, I had a good crowd interaction, and my new stuff killed, then that's when I'm...
That's the sweet spot?
That's the three things. Yeah. If one of those three things doesn't happen, that means I'm just a fraud. I'm like, you know.
And does stand-up occupy all of your frontal lobes? Or is it like, do you want to... Like, do you play a musical instrument? Do you have a...
No, I can't do anything else. I enjoy acting, you know?
Acting. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
When you were in Crazy Rich Asians, I think for Asian actors, that was like Braveheart was for Scottish actors.
Yeah.
You know, it was. And I wasn't in Braveheart. I always feel like such a fucking loser for not being in Braveheart.
Dude, that's so funny. Did you audition? Did you get an audition? What did you audition?
I auditioned for the guy
who kills Willem.
No. I auditioned. Do you remember the movie?
A little bit, yeah.
I auditioned for the part that was played by an Irish guy.
Oh.
And I know. But here's the thing as well. When the movie came out, I was in Hollywood and I was kind of broke.
It was awful. Yeah.
And I didn't have any work. And I went to audition for the part of reading the audiobook adaptation.
That's funny.
Of Braveheart. I didn't get it. The casting director said to me, "We don't feel your accent is authentic."
Wow.
I know.
That's so funny.
Yeah, but there was a time when, you know, Scottish fucking thing. I was like, do you ever look at parts and think, you know what, fuck you, no, I'm not doing it just because I'm Asian? Or because I would get that with Scottish, because I'd be like, fuck off.
I mean, when it was when it's kind of very stereotypically written, then I'm like, I don't want to do this. I'm gonna do this. I audition for everything on principle because I feel like I, as someone who didn't go to acting school, I need the reps.
Right.
I need the repetitions. Right. So whatever comes in, I'll audition for it. But that stuff, I'll tell my agents, like, hey, I'm sending in an audition because I need the practice.
But I'm not going to do this one.
There was one unfortunate one that was... So it was Clifford the Big Red Dog.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, this is cool.
You were going to be the dog?
No. I was like, this is a cool movie. I know this prop. It's IG. Right. I'm like, oh, well, you know, fun. Sounds fun. And they had me play the big bad guy, which I'm like, yeah, I'm down. Love being bad guy.
Right.
And in the movie, unfortunately, the big bad guy, he is a genetic biologist scientist, and he's trying to end world hunger, and he's trying to grow food bigger and bigger. And everything he grows, all his whole company keeps failing. All his underling scientists keep failing at growing big foods. And then he sees Clifford the Big Red Dog on TV. And he's like, get me that fucking dog because we need to figure out how this thing got so big.
How the dog got that big? I'm totally absorbed now. This is a great story.
But then now it looks like fucking Asian people are trying to eat dogs.
I never even thought about it.
I know.
Oh my God.
I'm sure they didn't think about that either.
Yeah.
And no one, because everyone's not a fucking idiot. So they want racist bad, so they want thinking that.
Right.
But me, I'm like, I told my agents, like, hey, even if I get this, I can't do this.
No, of course you can.
It's not a good look.
No.
It's not a good look. And so.
Shit. But have you ever done stuff and you went, oh no, I shouldn't have done that?
Okay, yes. Yeah. There's one. Okay, no, this is still another audition. You'll love this one. So this was a bag henchman. I get the audition in henchman for, I won't say which movie. And it's called, the henchman's name is The Scotsman. And I'm like, maybe that's just his name. Maybe the joke is that I have my accent,
right,
but my name is The Scotsman.
Right.
But the very first direction is, this henchman has a very thick Scottish accent. Please try to do your Scottish accent. The joke is that no one can understand his thick Scottish accent.
I've had a lot of those.
So somewhere on some cloud, somewhere, exists an audition of me doing a fucking Scottish accent.
Shut the fuck
and
up.
And just bit like
I wish I could hear
I
that.
I know. I wish I came and my friend recorded it and he was reading it with me and we would and I had my friend actually had to do the Scottish accent and then I would like impersonate him.
Is your friend Scottish?
No.
Oh fuck, man. Come on.
So no, but the whole joke was that
nobody could understand.
And then I'm like, well, do I want to be the Asian who people can't understand because of that accent, even if it's Scottish?
Yeah.
It's very, you know,
it's a fucking minefield. I auditioned one. I went for an audition once. I got this. I really needed a job in Hollywood. Yeah. And I got this audition to, there was a sitcom called Suddenly Susan with Brooke Shields, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember that show?
Yeah, it was great.
Right. In that show, there was a character, a Hispanic photographer. He was a photographer from Mexico or something like that. Mm. And for some reason, I was on the audition call-in for the fucking thing.
Right.
And I was like, and it's written like...
Right, yeah, exactly.
It's written for...
Exactly.
And I'm like, oh, jeez.
Exactly.
And this is the 90s and I need a job. So I go in and there's a whole line of guys in the audition. They all look like Antonio Banderas. Nobody looks like me at all. And I go in and I do the audition. I do the accent in the audition. like Speedy Gonzalez or something. It was bad.
It's so funny because all these auditions somewhere will probably just...
It's terrifying.
But what year was that?
It would have been 1995 because I tell you what happened is when I got done, or 96, when I got done with the audition, they said to me, that's the worst accent we've ever heard. I went, thanks. They said, but we are doing a show where we're looking... for a guy to play the English boss on the Drew Carey show. Yes, yes. Can you do an English accent?
Yes, yes.
And I said, sí, señor, yes, I can. Yeah. and I got a part from it. It wasn't the part I auditioned for, but because I think you should always go, if you're a young performer, always go. Always
That's why
go.
I always audition.
Yeah,
I always audition.
You're right. You're absolutely
right. Because there's been three projects now where they've given me something else. Or they're still writing the script and they write characters out.
Sure.
And then they hear your audition.
And they like you and they change the part to make you the guy.
Yes.
I think that's right. Yeah. You can't, but it's so, I don't know how I would be now, starting out, because you guys have you've got to have followers on your tickety talk and fucking.
I think yes and no. I think like I've met some people who were shoved into a project that I was on because of their followers.
Right.
And I've also met ones who come on because of their followers, but they're great anyway.
Right, right, sure.
So that's that.
Yeah.
And then I've met people who don't have any social media and they got cast from nothing.
Do you have a ton of social media?
I don't. I have Instagram, that's about it. Facebook, that's about it. Yeah.
Right.
I'm off Twitter now and
Twitter doesn't really exist anymore, does it?
I don't think so.
It's kind of fallen apart.
Yeah.
It used to be like super powerful.
But I guess I'm a little old school in the sense that when I started in 2009, YouTube just was getting its legs and no one had figured out how to do stand up on YouTube yet. In fact, stand up clips on the internet is a last 5-6 years thing.
Right.
Before that, it was YouTube comedy, right? It was YouTube style sketches.
Yeah, people would do them.
Yes.
They would do their little things.
Yeah, they do their things. And then the idea at that time was that if you were a stand-up or live performer, you would do your YouTube comedy, sell tickets, and people come and see you live. And you would do essentially a different show live.
Right.
Because there are different skill sets.
Right.
But in the last 6 years, people have figured out, I got to give credit to probably Andrew Schultz, is the one who figured out how to put stand-up clips on Instagram in short bursts, for better or for worse, and put subtitles and find a following and also educate the crowd in stand-up comedy. Because before that, you would watch YouTube-style comedy, which was very physical, it was very exaggerated,
right.
A little slapsticky, right?
Right.
And you could digest that in like 20 seconds. If you saw a stand-up clip at that time, you wouldn't even give it 5 seconds. You just, I gotta listen to a setup and then you just swipe. Whereas now, I think people have...
Because they have the subtitles that they put...
Subtitles and educating the crowd.
But I noticed that with my old late night show. Yes. It's all over that shit.
Yes, yes.
I don't get any of that. It's nothing to do with me. Right. I don't touch it. I don't edit it. I don't put the words on it. The people are clearly putting it out.
Yeah.
And I guess the hunger that the beast has is just for content. I mean, I made like 2,000 hours or 2,050 hours of
content. Yeah, there's nostalgia. There's also
Jesus Christ, I'm nostalgic. I suppose I am.
Yeah, I mean, when you did the Britney Spears thing, you know, and stuff like that, it's kind of socially relevant. if I had to analyze it, yeah, it's a bit of that. Also, just good comedy, right?
Yeah, that's not, yeah. Well, one likes to think.
Yeah, they put it on a, unfortunately, for better or for worse, in a more digestible
format.
Yeah,
they cut everything up and splice it together. Well, let me ask you this. Have you ever fallen foul of the pitfalls of our game? The drugs and alcohol, it's not a thing that...
Because I grew up in Singapore. It's just a very...
It's a very strict... In my head, it's very strict.
It's super strict.
You can't have gum or something.
No drugs, no freaking... Yeah, you can't...
No hats, no hats. No sodomy.
Yeah, you can't...
Jesus.
Yeah, so they're very strict about... So I just grew up in an environment where it's like, oh, there's no drugs. And I don't know. I'm physically allergic to drinking.
Yeah, me
so
too.
So I'll
yeah.
have like one drink and then I can stop, which in Australia was like crazy. I remember all the comics were always like, oh, they were like, oh, you don't drink, right? Like, I was known as a guy who doesn't drink. And I was like, I do drink. I just don't, I stop at like one. I don't need to go
They wouldn't understand that.
Yeah, it was always very, I was kind of known as the comic who doesn't drink. You know, they're like, they'll be like, oh, Ronnie, you don't drink, right?
Ronnie doesn't drink.
Yeah, yeah.
Ronnie doesn't drink. Come here, Ronnie, show them you're not drinking. Show them, Ronnie.
Basically.
Yeah,
and I also never felt the urge to. So I just, you know, I just.
Did you ever see any of them fucking giant spiders they've got there in Australia?
No, the ones that are scary isn't the fucking giant ones. It's the fucking.
The redbacks.
Redbacks are the most venomous. I saw one of those ones. Yeah.
Was it on your toilet?
No, it was in a shoe on a balcony and someone killed it immediately.
Because that's
the thing, that's the problem.
That'll kill you, that thing.
It will, yeah, but in my 10 years in Australia, I've only seen one of those.
Right, but so. You know, that's all you need. It's only has to be one. See, my wife, I'm like, we should go to Australia. She's like, I'm that guy. Like, what? It's these fucking spiders.
Dude.
And I was talking to her today and I said, I'm going to talk to Ronnie Chang and he's like spent a lot of time in Australia. And she said, ask him about those birds that can kill you with one kick. I'm like, you're making that up.
Yeah, does she mean an emu?
No, I think it's called a casamori or something.
What?
I never heard of it. And then she looked it up on the internet and apparently she showed me a picture of some giant chicken that'll kick the shit out of you.
What the hell?
I never saw it in Australia. I saw koala bears and shit, but
yeah,
they
were
friendly.
You know, my wife is Australian as well.
Well, will you ask her about the giant kicking bird?
Dude, I was there. I gotta find this giant kicking bird.
But yeah.
This isn't my joke. This is the great Will Anderson.
Yeah.
You know Will Anderson?
No, I don't know personally. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, the very funny comic. He's also a legend. And he's almost, I would say, almost like an Australian Dave Chappelle in how prolific he is. But this is his joke, not mine. I'm going to butcher it. But he was always like, man, Americans always scared about Australian animals. You guys have guns.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, everyone's always scared of spiders and this thing. Like, you guys have freaking machine guns.
Well, you need a gun, though, if you got spiders and chickens that can kick the shit out of you.
I gotta find this bird that can kick the beat. Kangaroos can beat the shit out of you.
Kangaroos are fucking mean.
Yeah, kangaroos can beat the shit out of you. The giant red kangaroos. Yeah, they can jump like 13 meters high. They got claws, they can rip your dick off.
They rip your dick off?
Yeah, they can because they're
And what they will do if they rip your dick off is they put your dick
into
their
pocket,
their pouch,
collect it,
and then they make a little necklace of them. That's what and they're like, "Do you like my necklace?"
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Did you ever play out in the like the boonies in Australia? Yeah. Did you ever go to like, you know, west of Adelaide and stuff like that?
I went to Alice Springs, which is Darwin, you know, which is the outback.
Yeah.
I didn't get to like super outback, but I got like moderate outback. So, you know,
so
like
the country Australia. Like, because for most Americans, obviously, outback's a reasonably priced family restaurant. But the outback in Australia, it's like people don't know. There's just nothing there.
Yeah, yeah. This is the whole desert. That miles and miles of desert. The middle of Australia is all desert, so people only live on the edge.
And are there comedy clubs
like in the middle?
like next to Uluru. Captain, hey, the Uluru chocolate, everybody.
Yeah, it's a Captain Brian's off the hook comedy club brand. No, there is comedy clubs in. Okay, so Australia comes from that Edinburgh comedy festival culture.
Right.
So we have clubs. Like every city has like maybe one club. But really, the way comedy is consumed there is comedy festivals. So every city and state will have its own comedy festival kind of thing. So it's like a Darwin festival. And then you'll go there and do comedy there.
Right,
so
okay. That's how you hang with all the local comedians. And
right. Well, no. They'll fly people in. So it'll be the same people. You know, you see the same guys.
You meet the same people all the time, right?
All the time, yeah. And then you go and you'll be performing in like small theaters in the country. So one thing, Australia... I didn't realize this until I got here, but Americans would consider Australia extremely socialist. So they have a lot of arts funding. The government funds a lot of arts for the country. Rural Australia has a lot of arts
funding. America has that too. They have that these theaters out there and like where you play an arts theater and it's like, how can they afford to pay me this to be here? And then you see who else is playing it and stuff. You all right? You're going to make
it? No, I'm okay. Yeah. But yeah, that's what they do. So I've done the Melbourne Comedy Festival roadshow twice, and that, you know, all around Australia. So I would go to country Australian towns and just perform there. So I've seen like country theaters, you know.
Do you consider yourself an Australian?
No, I'm Malaysian.
You're Malaysian. Talk to me about Malaysian Chinese, because I know nothing about, because I know it's a little tricky, right?
Yeah.
Politically.
Yeah, yeah.
So can you explain for me, just like, imagine I know nothing, which is not is exactly the truth, because there's some tension, right, between Malaysia and China.
Basically, I'm third generation Chinese Malaysian. So my grandparents came from China and they settled in. No, my grandparents' parents came from China and they settled in Malaysia.
Right.
So Malaysia has a large Chinese diaspora.
Right.
So yeah, I mean that's the best way I can explain it, is that there's like Chinese people in Malaysia. I think there's some. The racial tension, if there is any, is never on the ground. Like everyone in Malaysia is super friendly face to face.
Right.
It's always like the government is always trying to protect its majority Malay population from like minority like Chinese people.
So
you know, they'll give certain tax breaks. And this is official government policy.
Right.
They'll give tax breaks to the majority Malay race. They'll give school places to the majority Malay race, and they always play up those tensions, you know. So that's the kind of problem.
So the idea of a people in administration playing up racial tension in order to further their own agenda.
It's unfortunately
outside of the United States.
Unfortunately,
as well.
It's universal, yeah, and very clear along racial lines, and yeah, so. And it becomes a whole, you know, language, culture.
Do you speak Mandarin?
I speak Chinese, yeah.
Yeah. So, do you Mandarin Chinese or Cantonese Chinese?
I can speak both. Yeah.
Wow. That's because my son speaks Mandarin.
Wow.
My oldest son speaks Mandarin, which I'm...
That's amazing.
It is amazing because the language is so phonetically...
Yes. Different.
It's hard for me to... I got a pretty good ear for things, but Chinese is hard for me.
Yeah, as it should be.
Yeah.
It's a completely different language family.
Do you make it hard for me? Did you do it for you?
Yeah, we were like, make sure these Scottish people can't say these words. But I learned Chinese late. I learned Chinese from scratch when I was 8 years old. So I know what it's like to learn Chinese
from nothing. Yeah.
So I know how hard it is.
Can you do stand-up in Chinese?
I've done it before, but I'm not good at it. I can do like 5-10 minutes in it. You know Des Bishop?
Yeah.
Yeah, Des Bishop can speak Chinese.
What the fuck?
Irish, Queens-born Irish comedian Des Bishop. So he went to Ireland when he was a teenager, and he started doing stand-up comedy in Ireland. And one of the things he did as an Edinburgh show was he learnt Gaelic. Is it Gaelic?
Yeah.
Irish.
Nobody speaks Gaelic though.
Yeah, I mean, so he learnt it from scratch and he did comedy in it.
Wow.
And so that was his show, right?
Right.
And then maybe 5 or 8 years later, he said, you know what, I'm going to learn Chinese from scratch and do comedy in Chinese. So he moved to Beijing for 2 years. He learned Chinese from scratch. The guy speaks, I speak Chinese to him all the time.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he can read and write, which is not easy because reading and writing, there's no phonetical connection.
Right, there's no connection.
Yeah, and he does comedy in Chinese. He has a special on YouTube in Chinese. And I'm like, man.
That's crazy.
It's crazy.
It's very impressive.
Yes,
though.
It is. He doesn't get enough credit for it, unfortunately.
That is, a friend of mine, Eddie Izzard.
Yes.
Eddie.
I was on his gala.
Oh, yeah. You were?
That's how I met
Montreal?
Trevor Noah. Yes.
I've known Eddie for a very long time.
Yeah.
She learned her act in a language that she didn't speak.
Yes.
And then went out and did it without knowing really.
Not just that, Eddie did it in like 5 languages.
Yeah, that's right.
Spanish, Italian, French,
yeah.
German.
Yeah.
He was
crazy thing that he did. Yeah. I mean, and
then he ran like marathons, and then
25 marathons in 3 weeks.
Yeah,
and stuff
you run
like
a
that.
Marathon and then do a comedy show in a different language. It was crazy. It was crazy. It was absolutely insane.
You know what though? Here's what I think. His mother's probably a piece of work. Do you know his mom died when he was 3? Actually,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, his mom died when he was very young. And
so you know all these guys from back in the day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody was at Edinburgh.
Yes.
Everybody was at Edinburgh.
I was at Edinburgh.
Right. But you were at Edinburgh. I was already doing late night by the time you were in Edinburgh.
Yes.
But Edinburgh in the 80s was an interesting thing because I wonder, it was such a bacchanalian, it was such a heavy drinking, heavy late night thing.
Was.
But it sounds like Australia, when you were coming up, it's pretty much the same deal.
Edinburgh is different. Australia was a steady drunk. Edinburgh was an intense...
For 3 weeks drunk.
Bomb drunk, which like, again, I didn't drink, so I was just observing it. But man, it was physically and mentally exhausting. I don't know what it was like back in the day, but when
I ended up in rehab in 92, so yeah.
No, but what about how commercial it was? This is what I really want to ask you about, because when I went, it was, it's just so you have something to contrast with.
Yeah.
When I went was 2012, 2013, 2014.
Right.
And at that time, it was already Edinburgh Festival, Edinburgh Fringe, and then in response to the quote-unquote commercialization of the Edinburgh Fringe, they had the Free Fringe.
Right.
That was already going on. So there was essentially 3 festivals happening in this one city.
Yeah.
And so it was all a competition to get into the big 6 venues, whatever that was.
Yeah. You
know? So it was
the
like
Assembly Room,
Assembly,
Skill
Balloon, Underbelly,
something else.
And then in response to that, they started the Free Fringe to stop this idea. So was it like that when you started?
Yeah, it was similar. I mean, there were venues
Gilded
that
Balloon.
Were established. The Gilded Balloon was, I don't think I was there when I started.
Mm-hmm.
But the Assembly Rooms was the big one.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone tried to get in that. And there was this idea. I remember because I was Scottish.
Yes.
And there was all these English comedians used to come up and I fucking hated them. There was all, because they weren't really comedians. They were like rich kids that went to Oxford and Cambridge and they would come up. Some of them were talented, but most of them were just fucking, you know, playing at it.
Sure.
And they would come up and I would get, if I got a big audience to say, yes, but it's a local audience, isn't it? Yes. I'm like, well, isn't every fucking audience local audience?
That's so funny that even you had your gripes with the festival.
Oh my God.
As you should, because I have my gripes, but I don't know whether I'm just being a bitter, you know. Whatever.
No. You got to be bitter or you can't be stand-up. You have to have a certain amount of bitterness. Yeah. It's an essential part of the recipe.
The Michael Jordan chip on your shoulder.
Yeah, I think you have to have a little bit of it. Sure. It's part of the savory. Sure.
Yes.
You know, you can't have all.
Gives you a bit of edge.
Yeah, yes, I think so.
I agree.
And what makes you bitter then?
I don't know if it makes me bitter. I just got. So the joke is, which I did in Speakeasy, was that the joke for me, which is true, is that I would go to Edinburgh and try to get them to like me, and then they would always give me shitty reviews, and they would give me the worst reviews, and I think part of it is main reason is me. I wasn't very good, and I was still getting better starting out in comedy. And two, I think there's something to in Edinburgh, you know, that in the UK there's not a lot of context for what they would say East Asian storytelling.
Yeah,
there's a lot of context for Asian storytelling for Indian subcontinent, like that kind of. Even I would say the British Muslim experience.
Sure.
There's our context.
Yeah,
I think the East Asian experience in the UK is still very unclear, you know?
Do you know what? My theory is about the Edinburgh Festival, about bad reviews, here's what it is. Because I've gone through that and I feel exactly the fucking same.
Yeah, yeah.
But here's what happens. So Edinburgh is a small, sleepy town. Mm. It has one fucking local newspaper, right? Mm. One fucking newspaper. And there's one guy on that newspaper that is even interested in comedy, right? Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
But during the Edinburgh Festival, there's like 20,000 fucking stand-up shows.
Yeah.
So they have to draft every fucking journalist they have. Anybody they know they can write. And they all go out and write reviews of comedy.
Yes.
So if you get the guy who normally writes about owls, right?
Yes.
And he's reviewing you and you go, Craig Ferguson's show was very disappointing. There were no owls.
And they
bring their fucking agenda to the review.
Yes, yes.
Just like people on the internet do.
Yes, 1,000%.
You know, and I think that... What was great training for me for the internet was how shitty the reviews were in Edinburgh.
Yes.
I remember getting a bad review and I've met the journalist in the bar and I was like, the fuck with you, man? The fuck with it? Because I was like, what the fucking review? It was fucking terrible. He was like, he didn't like my hair. What the fuck has my hair got to do with that? And all that shit.
Right.
And he said to me, like, I'll never forget this. He said, if you put your head above the parapet, you should be ready to get shot at. I said, it's not fucking war. It's not a fucking parapet. It's just a fucking guy telling jokes.
Right.
Why do you make everything conflict?
Yes.
And I still think that about like the internet now. The internet, I think, is just like show business. It's only dangerous if you take it seriously.
Yes, I agree.
But if you take it seriously, it can kill you.
Yes, I agree. I agree. And so that's a great way to put it.
So what would happen to you, like, say it's 20 years from now?
Yeah.
Where do you want to be? Do you have a wannabe? Do you want to have kids? Do you want to get out of town? Do you want to have a farm with maybe kangaroos and shit?
I'm kind of really living the dream right now.
So
every day, every night when I can do stand up, I'm just like, damn, I feel like I'm living in a dream world. Like when I'm at the Cellar, when I'm at Gotham, when I'm taking the subway to West Side Comedy Club, stand up New York.
You're the real deal, man. You're living it. That's right.
And I remember when I visited New York, I was like, damn, how great would it be to be able to take a subway and do multiple spots a night.
Yeah.
You know, and have stage time and all that. And now, like, you know, we're in a rare position where you can get that.
Sure.
You know, it's actually not that many people.
There's already 28-year-old kids that you come into the club and they're like, oh, fuck that guy. That was my spot.
Right.
I'm fucking, Ronnie Chang's going on.
No, I never bump them.
I never bump, but the club will know.
No, no, I never bump. I always book in 2 weeks in advance.
Oh, you do?
I don't bump.
I don't bump people.
I hate it when people bump me. So I never bump people.
Did you ever get bumped?
Yeah, one time at the Cellar, I got bumped by, and this lineup was incredible. Like, I couldn't even. First of all, when I say I hate getting bumped, I don't even mind because whoever bumps me, I'm a fan of this.
All right.
This one night, I was at a cellar and man, first it was, I'm going to get the order wrong, but I'll get all the names right. It was Aziz came in and bumped and I was on the lineup, right? So they bumped, so meaning, okay, everyone's going to get later. And then John Stewart came in and bumped. And then Louis C.K. came in. And then Amy Schumer came in.
Richard Pryor came back from the dead.
No. And then Madonna came in.
Shut the fuck up. What?
Madonna came in. Then they did a double act. Madonna, Amy Schumer. And the lineup made the news.
Jesus.
Yeah. It was like a multi-million dollar lineup. But, you know, money, whatever. But it was just cool to see that.
That is fun.
The whole show got bumped. The whole show got bumped.
That's crazy.
I think Chris Rock may have jumped in. But definitely those names I said. And that was fun. That's part of being in New York. You can't see that.
Yeah, it is.
You can't see anywhere else. Yeah. Literally the best comedy scene in the world. You know, there's so much stage time, there's so much energy. There's a very ready audience that's usually very comedy
savvy.
They're
literate and they understand.
Yeah. Or at the very least, they're tourists who are here to experience what they think is a New York cultural
comedy
thing.
Club,
you know? So, you know, it's a dream. But when you're going to, that's what I really love about your show, by the way, with Edinburgh, was when I watched your show, I remember thinking, this has Edinburgh all over it.
I just stole everything from there. You know, the horse, the robot, the thing.
The robot, all this, and you're going up close to the camera. Like,
yeah.
But to me, Edinburgh Fringe, which I didn't appreciate at the time, but now I do more now, is such a response to whatever people think the mainstream should be.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And so whatever mainstream is just do something
rock.
Different.
Yeah, it was punk rock.
It was punk rock.
And that's what it was. It was
right. And that's, I could see that sensibility in the show, you know? And I think that's something that like, I think Americans didn't. They understood they were watching something a little alternative, but like, I knew the roots of this. I was like, I've seen this.
Yeah,
Edinburgh, we do this all the time.
That's
I did a talk show in Edinburgh where someone pierced their mouth with a needle and made out with someone in the crowd. Like, you know, and I don't come from that. So for me, it was because Singapore's as straight laced as you can get.
Yeah, do you enjoy gum now? Do you take a lot? Do you have a lot of gum?
Yeah, addicted. Yeah, can't nonstop. Every moment get itches.
I wish you well. I'm so glad you came in to talk to me. No. I am a fan of yours. I think you're a great stand up.
Oh, thank you.
You're just going to get better and better and better. By the way, you're saying, although I'm just watching you, I'm like, you look to me like someone at the peak of their powers, and it's amazing.
Oh, thank you. Hopefully, I'll get better. Yeah, trying to get better.
Try and get better, Ronnie, because really, it's a little poor right now. It's terrific, and I wish you well.
Thank you.
And speak to you soon.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Take it easy, man.
Very nice to meet you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth, no matter who you are, that mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at betterhelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.